GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. This is the George Hale Rick Tyler Show welcoming the stars of the main event, seen Sunday evenings on Maine Public Television to the PDQ or telephone line. George, who is the former state senator who hangs out in Augusta?
Well, I'm sure she spent a lot of time there. Erin Herbig?
Former state
senator that
hangs out in Augusta.
Well, that would be Roger Cate.
Thank you, George. Roger, good morning.
You didn't recognize me with my mask on, George.
No, yes, it was Halloween.
Exactly, that's what it is.
But I was going to introduce our...
And the current state senator who hangs out in Belfast is Erin Herbig. Erin, good morning to you.
Good morning and happy Halloween to all of you.
Now, before we get started, George, ask Erin.
I didn't want to put her out in ex officio capacity.
No, you don't want to do that. Ask Erin.
George.
Ask Erin what her four-year-old is dressing up as... for Halloween this evening. Ask her that, George.
Well, all right. What's your four-year-old dressing up as today?
He is dressing up as a radio.
Boom!
A radio.
Oh.
Isn't that awesome? Yes, Charles has been wanting to be a radio all summer. So, yes, I have a little Bluetooth speaker inside of it, so it's going to play music. And we've got an AM, FM dial, and we even have a USB and an aux cord coming out of it. So
well,
he's going to be pretty awesome tonight. Hopefully the winds won't take us all away.
Well, make sure it's not tuned to a talk radio station
right,
so he doesn't tick anybody off and won't get him any candy.
That'll be tick or treat.
Thank you for the advice.
By the way, Roger, we told Erin that if that little kid came to our door dressed as a radio, we would just dump the candy bucket right out into his little pillowcase and send him on his way and then shut the lights out behind us.
Yeah, really. You know, this reminds me of raining tonight.
But I would be cursing you in my head.
Erin, make sure you didn't make the same mistake I did when I was a little boy when it was raining and use a paper bag, and then the bag got soaking wet and broke and I lost half my candy. So don't make that mistake.
Oh, okay.
Sadness.
Good tips here on the show this morning.
Erin, you hinted to us that on this Sunday's edition of the main event on Maine Public Television, that you're going to be talking about what's going to be the legalization of marijuana, the recreational legalization of marijuana, and retail sales. Can you give us a hint as to what you guys are going to kick around?
Sure. The show will air this Sunday at 6 p.m. on Maine Public Television, and our guest is Eric Gunderson. He is the director of the Maine Office of Marijuana Policy, and we are going to be talking about, as you all know, this was passed by the voters in 2016 at the ballot, but it's been sort of slow going to get it up and running. But from what we heard from Eric, it sounds like retail sales may be happening at some point next year.
Roger, it's been a long, bumpy road, really. The voters correctly in 2016, but apparently we can expect customers to have the ability to purchase in retail stores run by March.
Well, we asked him that question directly, George, and he wasn't willing to commit to a specific date, but it sounds like maybe around that period of time. You're right, it's been a long, bumpy road. The voters passed this back in November of 2016. And there's a variety of reasons why it's taken so long, but it is finally coming. It's not that easy to get up and running. It sounds like Eric's the office has been doing a great job. They're going to start taking applications for stores and testing labs and production facilities maybe around the first of the year. And then it really depends, according to him, on how many applications they get and how long it's going to take them to process this. Keep in mind, too, that just because you get a license from the state doesn't mean you can start operating any of these facilities. You've also got to get permission from the local towns. So the town has to opt in to allow any of these things like sales to take place. And if the town doesn't opt in, then you can't do it in that town.
Erin, let me bounce back to you with this. There are some who were so adamant about the legalization of the recreational use of marijuana that they see it as a simple thing. Look, just let us do what we want to do. Why the need for a bumpy road? But roads aren't really paved that smoothly when it comes to such a complicated issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was interesting. When it passed the voters in 2016, I think, there were a number of my and Roger's colleagues in Augusta that were just adamantly opposed to legalizing recreational marijuana, right? And so one of them was our former governor, Paul LePage. So every time we would, there were some issues with the law that passed at the ballot box. There were things like I mean, there was no age limit on it. So my toddler, we were speaking out earlier, could be down at the city park, you know, engaging in some sort of a THC product. So obviously that's not okay. There were also some other glitches that we needed to clean up. And we had bipartisan support on those things. But then when it really came to looking at, you know, the taxation and what law enforcement's role is going to be in this and how it's going to interact with our municipalities, there were definitely some of my colleagues that were just like, no, we just don't want to do this. Whereas the rest of us were like, actually, it doesn't matter how you feel. Like, this was passed by the voters. We need to do our jobs and make sure it's implemented in a safe manner that, you know, the public is going to be able to do this and this is going to go smoothly.
One of the issues right all the way along has been a process to ultimately, Roger, I'll go to you, to protect the public health and safety. Not everybody was on board with this. Not everybody's convinced it's a great idea. Most everybody agrees that probably there's going to be some income. But it's not so cut and dry. And you, in the legal field, know that it's still against federal law. And there are a lot of people in Maine who are not going to be able to use it on the job, and they can be tested. So it's not so easy just to say, let's go do it.
You're right. And, you know, personally, I voted against this referendum back in 2016, and then we started working on this in the legislature, and I was on the committee that did it. And one of the things we did was go out to Colorado, George, and we met with people out there. And I remember as I was coming back to go to the airport, I was in Denver, and I saw three guys out on the street smoking a joint. And I said, geez, is this really what we want to have back in the state of Maine? And then I flew back to Maine, and I went to downtown Portland, and guess what I saw? Three guys on the corner smoking a joint. And I think the point was that the people are doing it. Let's make sure that the product they get is going to be safe if people choose to use it. Let's make sure that law enforcement has the tools to keep our highways safe, and let's regulate it and let's tax it in a rational way so that it can be done in a healthy way. So your question about health and safety and public safety, we made sure that part of the tax money that's going to come in on these sales is going to go to public education, particularly for kids, about the issues about using marijuana and the public in general, particularly about edibles and how, you know, they are delayed in their impact. And so don't be careful how you use them. And part of the money, too, is going to be used for public safety, particularly for training policemen around the state in drug detection recognition issues, so that we can make sure that if people are operating under the influence of marijuana, that we can make sure we keep them off the roads. In light of the fact that there is no good chemical test yet, like there is for alcohol, to determine intoxication.
Aaron, can I toss that same question to you? Because, Roger, I agree with you. And, George, I told you, I recently, that was about a year ago, I guess, went to Portland, Oregon, where it is legal. And we saw what the streets looked like. Aaron, I don't want Belfast to become like Portland, Oregon. How do we make sure that our state doesn't become the state where the legalization of marijuana leads to social and economic decline?
I hear what you're saying. I don't want Belfast or any community in Maine to feel unsafe. And I don't think anybody does. That's why the process we've been so diligent about making sure that all bases are covered to make sure that law enforcement is prepared. You know, I also think, as Roger mentioned earlier, what's interesting is that communities actually have to opt in to having this sort of sale go on in their city or town. So it'll be interesting to see how cities and towns handle that. I imagine we'll have some pretty interesting town meetings this spring and fiery discussion. You know, I see that side of it. I understand the concern. But, you know, I will also say that I hear from so many of my constituents that when they look at, you know, how we're having trouble paying for our roads and for public education and all of these other, you know, things the state provides, marijuana does serve as a place for opportunity to what we hope generate some revenue to fund some things that we all really care about.
I'll just stay right with you, Aaron. I used to go to a dry town in Maine, and it was quite easy to get a drink in that town. And I asked the locals, if you vote dry, I mean, why do you do that? Said, oh, we have a good time. We stagger up to the polls and we vote dry. And everybody was happy. We're going to have patchwork marijuana here in the state, aren't we? One town yes, one town no. Kids are going to cross over the bridge. Isn't this going to be a zoo down the road?
I mean, Mainers love local control, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we're all fiercely independent like that. And I do think it's right to leave it into the hands. Also, you know, Maine is a really kind of diverse state, right? Like, Portland is not like Belfast and is certainly not like Presque Isle. So I do think it's the right thing to leave it into the hands of the communities to decide what they want their community to become, and the role that this new law plays. What I will also say, though, is that in Maine, we have had a very successful medical marijuana practice that has been safe, that has delivered safe products to patients. I think that we already have, that's been going on since the 90s, and I think we've done that very, very well. So what I will say is I think going into this, we do have a medical marijuana history that has worked well. And we've, as Roger mentioned, the committee really took a lot of time going to other states to see what has worked and what hasn't. The fact that we're in the timeline a little bit behind some of these other states, I think really works to our advantage.
Roger, I can only imagine, dovetailing on George's question, if it's legal in Portland, but it's illegal in South Portland, what a nightmare for law enforcement.
Well, that's right. And the reason that there's this local control in the law is really twofold. First of all, as Aaron said, we have just have this tradition in Maine of local control, and I think it's something we all believe in. But secondly, just as a political matter, in order to get this thing passed, it wasn't going to pass unless there was an opt-in provision in the law. So that's why it's there. And that's all good, but Here's another potential danger of this. I mean, so far only 22 communities in Maine have opted in for one form of activity or not, whether it's retail or testing or production. And one of the things we really want to do with this law is to kill the black market, which is the market that's existed now for God knows how long in the state. And if you have large parts of the state where towns have not opted in, and people are still going to want to access marijuana, I mean, where are they going to get it? They can drive 30 miles to Portland or to some other town that's opted in, or are they going to continue just to buy from who they've been buying from right along? And that is the black market, where there's no testing, where there's no dosage control, where there are no packaging safeguards and no warnings on the product. So we're hoping that there will be at least a geographic diversity of the towns that opt into this, so that everyone will be able to buy good, safe, and by the way, taxed product.
Even if states allow marijuana, the federal government is still prohibiting pot. And they have a scheduling system. The last I knew, it was classified as a Schedule 1, meaning it's perceived to have no medical value and a high potential for abuse. But that doesn't mean the federal government takes the view that marijuana and heroin are equally dangerous. The big distinction is what the federal government does. And aren't we still sitting on that razor-thin edge? Aaron, what happens if this administration or our new administration says, hey, we're going to crack down?
That would be interesting. I'm not sure. What I do know is that other states have taken steps to make this, you know, as much of a normal part of our society. You know, it is awkward, the fact that this is something that is not allowed at the federal level, but now a number of states have made it legal within their own boundaries. Something that I was really concerned about was the banking piece, because for a long time it was known that folks that were just sort of operating in cash, because the banks couldn't accept any money that was being made. But now, since legalization, I know that producers are now able to deposit their funds in some, not all, but some main banks. So I think over time we will continue to work things out. But this is an entirely new industry, you know. I mean, think about that, and you know, and all the different pieces of it. It's going to take time to figure it all out and implement it correctly.
In a final moment here, Roger, you just had a sentence or a segment in which you suggested that we need to get rid of the black market, but we're also going to tax what the state is offering. And a listener pointed out, I pinged in my brain too, that those two concepts don't entirely play well together, because taxing it, if I wanted it, I could just get it. We're going to drive the black market further underground, aren't we?
Well, yes, but looking at the experience in other states, I mean, I think the key is don't tax it too much. And that's one of the things we really talked about, how much are we going to tax this? And we came up with a tax that's around 20% between excise and sales tax, which is right smack in the middle of what other states have done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the theory here, Rick, is that, and I think it's borne out in other states, most people want to follow the law. And if they have a choice of buying it legally and they know it's going to be safe, they know it's going to be protected from their kids, they know it's going to be dosed properly, they're going to do it, even if it costs a few pennies more. So
right.
The key is to keep the cost in the ballpark.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.